Mm-hmm.
I don't know when you want. I'm
Well,
ready.
we can start. Hello, everybody, and a happy new year. This is the first seminar of this year. We have already a schedule, a quite full schedule, until the end of February. Feel free, actually, I encourage you to contact me proposing speakers. And today we have an unknown person, Ambra, unknown to nobody. But anyway, two people just arrived at LIME. I prefer also for Ambra to introduce her, giving a brief CV. Okay, so Ambra studied at the very beginning in Bologna. Then she got the PhD at CISA in Trieste. I retain a keyword for your two keywords for your scientific research, at least since then: asymptotic giant branch and dust. Okay, then I leave you to precise later. Then she did a postdoc at the Keele University in UK, and then in Padua. Always working on synthetic giant branch stars and on the properties of the stars they produce. Then she got a CNES fellowship at LAM, and she left LAM some weeks ago, I would say, because
month,
yeah, but and now she's in Poland at the National Center of Nuclear Research as postdoc. And that's it. So, Ambra, when you're ready, you can start. Yeah. You will be recorded.
Okay, thank you. So it's a pleasure to give this presentation and to be back here, even though just virtually. And yes, so I'm going to talk about the chemical enrichment of local and IRA shift galaxies. And as Carlo mentioned, I'm currently in Poland, in Warsaw, at the National Center for Nuclear Research. But what I'm going to present has been done mainly at LAM while I was a CNES fellow. And these are the people that mostly contributed to this work. So I'm going to focus this talk mainly on the dust evolution in galaxies, as the image suggests. And just to start, just to remind why we care about dust. So we care about dust for a number of reasons in astrophysics, even though we know that the dust component is just 1%, about 1% of the total baryons in the universe. But even though we cannot neglect these small components for several reasons, so we know that dust is important for stars, planet formation, for the production of molecules in space, and concerning the galaxy evolution field, we have that dust has a strong influence in shaping the SED of galaxies by absorbing the UV and optical photons and re-emitting this energy at longer wavelengths. So we cannot neglect dust because it has a big influence in baryon evolution, and we need to study it to understand the physical processes from the small scale to the very large scale. So this is a very short introduction, and we see dust in through different facilities, ground-based and space-based, so space telescopes, basically. Of course, in the mid-infrared and in the far infrared with Spitzer and Herschel, but also in the sub-millimeter and millimeter bands, depending also on the distance of the galaxy of the redshift with ALMA and NOIMA. And it's impressive the fact that we are getting better and better data to analyze and to interpret and to constrain our models and the dust property through the cosmic time. We are looking forward to the James Webb Space Telescope to be launched in October 2021. And so this will allow to get a lot of more of information in the near and the mid-infrared bands and to study dust properties in galaxies up to redshift 3, as well as the metallicity and the stellar population of very distant galaxies at the epoch of baryonization. And in the longer perspective, we will have other facilities, such as, for example, the Origin Space Telescope. So in order to understand the spectrophotometrical evolution of galaxies, we need to understand the baryon evolution in the interstellar medium. And so we have to take into account the interplay of different physical processes. First of all, we have to study stellar evolution. In particular, we have massive stars. So the representation here in the left, we have massive stars that are stars with the mass less than about 10 solar masses that evolve quickly in less than 30 mega years, exploding as type 2 supernova. And they are pretty important because we know that these are the first stars reaching the interstellar medium with metals and dust. And then we have low intermediate mass stars, so stars with mass less than 8 solar masses, which need at least 100 mega years to evolve up to the age of the universe. And they have quite a different evolution because they end their evolution more quietly, losing mass, losing their envelope during the thermally pulsing asymptotic giant branch phase, TPAGB phase. And most of the stars will actually go through this phase, so it's quite important to study it. And also here in the right, we can appreciate that beside the stars reaching the interstellar medium, from which and from the rich gas, we can have the formation of other generation of stars. We can see that there are other physical processes taking place, such as large-scale galactic inflows and outflow, that are, of course, changing the amount of gas, metal, and dust in the interstellar medium of galaxies. So we want to study and to model these processes, but when we try to do this, we have to face the fact that, unfortunately, there are uncertainties, but we can learn quite a lot about these processes, as I'm going to tell you. So the first uncertainty, in particular, this uncertainty is related to dust evolution, also to metal evolution, but in particular to dust. And the first uncertainties we have is related to type 2 supernovae. The basic point is that we are not able at the moment to constrain exactly how much of the dust produced by this object produces, so how much dust is formed and then can survive to the harsh environment of the supernova remnant. In particular, we have that we observe dust to be producing these objects, but then we have a process that is called the reverse shock. So when a supernova explodes, we have a forward shock that is wiping out the gas in the interstellar medium. And then when this forward shock encounters the interstellar medium, we have a reverse shock that is actually destroying the dust that is freshly produced. According to the calculation of some people, some authors say that only between 20% of the freshly produced dust can survive to the passage of the reverse shock. But there is not a common agreement because other people claim that actually if the grain can are around 0.5 or 1 micron of size, they can better survive to the passage of the reverse shock. And also we have an effect due to the fact that we have the forward shock that can destroy pre-existing grains in the interstellar medium, but also there are some indication of the fact that these grains can be reformed when the gas cools down again. But still, the picture is not yet well understood. And again, we hope to gain some more information about dust production in supernova from the James Webb. So another uncertainty is related to dust production during the TPAGB phase, so for low and intermediate mass stars. When we want to model this, we have processes that are not well constrained and not easy to model from first principle. In particular, the mass loss rate and its dependence on the stellar parameters and the efficiency of what is called the third ridge up, which is a process that is able to bring the carbon produced inside the stars and can bring this carbon up to the surface. And this is believed to be the way in which we enrich the galaxies with carbon dust, so it's pretty important. And here is an example. So we have the mass of dust produced as a function of the initial mass of the star for a given metallicity, which is pretty low, so can be relevant in the early universe, for example, or in low metallicity systems. And here we have the results obtained with two different codes, stellar evolutionary code, which are the FRANS code, developed by the group in Teramo in Italy. And here we have the ATOM code developed by the group in Roma, always in Italy, of course. And here we can clearly appreciate that there is a huge difference between the dust yield produced by these two codes, given the fact that there are different assumptions related to these processes. And so this has a consequence, of course, when we want to model the dust evolution in galaxies. So if we focus on the lower panel, we see the results I obtained by running a simulation. So this is just the dust produced by AGB stars without any other contribution. So with a single burst for the formation of the star and a Chabrier IMF. And we can clearly see that for the FRANS code, we are able to produce dust earlier with respect to the ATOM code. So it's important to test the results with different codes. So we have also another process taking place that at least can take place in this context, which is dust growing the interstellar medium, and not going too much into the details, but just to let you know that this process is assumed to be very efficient in simulation usually, but we have to remember that nevertheless we don't understand it on the macroscopic point of view, so I can get back to it later if you are interested. And so given these uncertainties, we can ask ourselves if we are actually able to explain the dust content observed in galaxies, and if we can actually constrain the baryon cycle in galaxies, and how, so what we learn from this analysis. So just to start, I am showing you some results from Rémy Rouillet et al. 2015, in which we have a commonly used diagnostic for proving dust evolution, which is the mass of dust over the stellar mass as a function of what is called the specific star formation rate, which is the star formation rate over the stellar mass. And in this case, if we assume that the star formation history of this object is pretty simple, we can read this plot as a function of time or age if we look at it from the right to the left, so in this direction. And we have here plotted two kind of objects. So the DGS galaxies, which are, these are all local galaxies, and the DGS are low metallicity local galaxies, while the kingfish are usually early type galaxies, so they have a larger metallicity and a larger mass with respect to the dwarf galaxies. And here you see overplotted three different color lines that correspond to three different models with different assumptions for the star formation history from Mazan et al. 2013. And so we can see that in this framework, kingfish galaxies are quite well reproduced, while we have some problems, for example, for dwarf galaxies. So in this framework, what do we have? We have that at the beginning, we have the contribution of dust from type 2 supernova. So here we are at the beginning of the cycle, so we still don't have AGB stars that requires a longer time to evolve. But we also have that this, so the assumption here is that type 2 supernova are not producing a lot of dust. So we are in the case in which the reverse shock efficiently destroys dust grains. But nevertheless, we have that these stars are enriching the interstellar medium with metals. So in this framework in which dust growth is quite efficient, we have that when we reach a critical metallicity, we are able to efficiently grow dust in the interstellar medium. And so you see a steep rise in the amount of dust. And later on, you need some process that is able to decrease your ratio of the mass of dust over the stellar mass. And in this specific framework, we have that this process is dust consumption due to star formation. So we have the stars are formed, and by forming, they are consuming the dust in the interstellar medium. But as I was mentioning, we have a problem here that at the beginning of the baryon cycle, we are not able to reproduce this low metallicity galaxies. And so we decided to focus on this problem and to revise the metal and dust evolution for these systems. And so we came up with the two papers. So why we focus on this? Well, because as I was mentioning, there are problems in reproducing this observable. So it's an interesting problem by itself, but there is also another reason for which is worth looking in these galaxies. And the reason is that these systems are considered to be the most similar galaxies that we have in the local universe to the ones that have been that we found actually at the very early epochs, so the epoch of the ionization. So the first they are considered to be similar to the first galaxy ever seen in the universe. And so we thought that by studying these galaxies, these local galaxies, for which we have much more information, of course, with respect to the high redshift galaxies, we can hope to better understand the high redshift systems and the rise of metals and dust in the early universe. And so this was also object of a press release. So we believe that it was worth trying to do this and doing this. So I will start to tell you which information we have about these galaxies. So high redshift galaxies and local dwarf galaxies at low metallicity, both are considered to be low metallicity systems. So we can perform the SED fitting of these systems. We do it homogeneously, consistently, and we can derive the physical parameters. So the mass of dust, the stellar mass, the age and star formation rate, and we can build again the same diagnostic plots that I showed you before. So in which the red are local dwarf galaxies and the black are Lyman Break galaxies. So if you see here that there are these big error bars, it's because for these objects we have only upper limits. And so for local dwarf galaxies, we have also other information such as the metallicity and the gas fraction, which is pretty important to constrain the models, as I will show you in a minute. And also in some cases, circumstellar dust. So, circumgalactic dust. So the dust that have been ejected by the galaxy. What we did was to focus first of all on local galaxies, because actually it's more easy to model metal and gas enrichment rather than dust. As I was mentioning before, dust has more uncertainty. So we started to show you which constraint we can put by studying metal, the metallicity and the gas fraction in local galaxies. So the first constraint that we can derive is by using the metallicity. So we can look at the metallicity as a function of the specific star formation rate. And so what we have here is that we were able to actually constrain the star formation efficiency in these systems. So star formation efficiency means how much of the gas initially present in the system is then converted into star finally. We tested also the hypothesis of having inflows, but there was degeneracy between the results. So the case that I'm showing is the one in which we have that all the gas is or the baryons are already present in the galaxies when I start the simulation. And here are the different colors that you see correspond to different amount of gas initially present in our system with respect to the final mass of the final stellar mass. So the black curve is for a mass of gas twice the final stellar mass, the blue 10 times the final stellar mass, 20, 50, and 100. And the different line style that you see correspond to different assumptions for the outflow efficiency. So this is just to show you that we can cover the range of metallicity by different assumptions. So as you can see here, we need the mass of gas to be at least 10 times the final mass of the star, but even more, in order to reproduce the metallicity of this system. So the conclusion was that the typical star formation efficiency in these galaxies is just a few percent. Otherwise, we are not able to reproduce the metallicity because we are enriching the interstellar medium too quickly. This is the message. And so this was the way in which we constrain how much of the gas we need to have in our simulation. Moving further, we can look at the gas fraction in these systems, always as a function of the specific star formation rate. And given that we need a lot of gas at the beginning of our simulation, we found that the star formation was not able to reproduce the gas fraction of this system. So of decreasing the gas fraction in these galaxies of such an amount that we can reproduce the most of them, let's say. And so the conclusion was that we needed an efficient outflow to reproduce these galaxies. So here you see different line and the different colors are increasing our different outflow efficiencies that of course increases in this direction. So this was the second constraint that we put. And interestingly, if we look actually at the diagnostic plot that I was mentioning before, so the dust, mass of dust over the stellar mass as a function of the specific star formation rate, we found that this outflow is also needed if we want to reproduce these observables, both for local dwarf galaxies, but also for Lyman Break galaxy. So you see that actually the trend that we get for the two sets of galaxies are pretty similar, even though Lyman-Break galaxy seems to lose their get rid of their dust more quickly with respect to dwarf galaxies. And so here you see again different color corresponding to different outflows efficiency. And also we run two sets of model corresponding to different line styles, which are the ones with dust growing in the interstellar medium and the one without dust growing in the interstellar medium. And so the conclusion here was that still we need an efficient outflow, which is more important actually than the destruction from type 2 supernova in the interstellar medium. And the reason is that the efficiency of dust destruction by supernova is reduced by the fact that we need a large amount of gas in our simulation. And also another interesting thing to notice is that as the outflow increases, we see that these two simulations with and without dust growth becomes more similar. And so in our case, the effect of dust growth is not critical in order to reproduce our observations and is kind of washed out by the fact that we have the outflow. And this so were the main picture that we built. But there is still something. So at the beginning, I told you that we have a problem in reproducing this ratio at the beginning of the baryon cycle. So I told you a lot about what we constrain, but I didn't tell you how I get to that large value, which I'm going to tell you now. So the basic point is that we are looking for a trend of this kind, so in which here we have the beginning of our baryon cycle, and then we have something that is doing something of this kind. And the trick is here. So as I was mentioning, in the Asano model, we have low condensation, low dust produced by type 2 supernova. And instead of what we wanted here, in order to have this kind of trend, we require a fast enrichment of dust from types of supernova. And this is followed by an efficient galactic outflow. So in order to get to this high value, we had to kind of change the trajectory of our evolutionary models. And so how do you obtain this? You can obtain this by combining two different factors, which are the fraction of metals that are condensed into dust grains. So you can change this hypothesis, and you can change also the initial mass function. So here I'm showing the same plot. For two different initial mass function, which are the Chabrier mass function and a top heavy IMF. Top heavy means that the production of massive stars is favorable, and so we can produce much more metals and as a consequence dust from massive stars. And we can clearly see that already with a 50% condensation fraction of metals into dust, which is quite a lot already. We are not able at all to reproduce this object with the Chabrier IMF initial mass function. And instead, if we assume a top heavy IMF, we are instead, we obtain much better results. So it's worth also notice that also in this case, the fact of having this grand interstellar medium does not change critically our findings. And also, so in this case, this is what helped us to reproduce the observations. As a consequence, we expect low contribution from AGB stars because we have less LOMA stars. Also, what is interesting to see is that if I assume a full condensation fraction of metals into dust with the Chabrier IMF, we are still not able to reproduce the observations. If I add the same for the top heavy IMF, actually we are able almost to cover all the range of the mass of dust, but there are still some galaxies left. So since 50% condensation fraction is already a lot, 100% is a quite extreme assumption. So we can think that there is still something we don't understand. Either the metal yields are underestimating the metals and dust produced by massive stars, or another option is that we might being somehow also overestimating the mass of dust in some systems. So I think we pretty much understand what is going on, but still not everything is understood. So we need further investigation. And this is what I would like to do in the future. So one of the issues that when you derive the mass of dust from the SED fitting, you have to assume something for the dust properties, and this is going to affect your estimate. So what I would like to do is to couple dust evolution in the interstellar medium with dust emission, and in order to consistently evaluate the mass of dust in galaxies from the SED fitting. And this is from the theoretical and modeling point of view. And then we would like also to extend our investigation to other samples of galaxies. For example, we are currently with Denis and his PhD student Jana, started to, and in collaboration also with Mathieu, we started to analyze the sample coming from the Alpine survey in order also to see. To cover the better the redshift range. And also in the short term, I would like also to start some investigation in collaboration with Pierre Cox in order to analyze a sample of galaxies from the Vigal project, which is an OEMA large program. And here is an example of the quality of the data we can have with these facilities also at high redshift. So this is a galaxies around redshift 3. And you see that actually the dust continuum is very well probed. And I'm very confident that in the future we will get better and better data to be analyzed and to be interpreted in order to constrain these processes and to improve the models. And of course, we are looking forward, as I was mentioning, to the James Webb Telescope. And so the natural thing to do is doing a follow-up of the at least some of the Lyman Breaker galaxies at the epoch of the reionization. That is what we propose for Cycle 1 science. And also, we have other projects, other proposals developed with Pierre and also Stefano Berta concerning the Zygal galaxies. And also, there will be a lot of data, for example, from the CHIRS project, and this is early release science. So, just to keep you updated, I think a good initiative is this one. So I recently became topic editor for this quite young journal, which is called Universe. And I'm about to prepare a special issue on these topics. So I hope that you can keep updated on these topics if you are interested. And so we are just at the beginning, but this is also part of my work and future plans to do this for this journal. And these are my scientific conclusions that I can leave it here. It's just a summary. So so the origin of dust is still debated, but we can learn a lot about it and constraining the contribution of type 2 supernova, for example, as I'm showing. So we found that we need a lot of dust from this object, as so we are rather in the case in which dust is preserved when the reverse shock is going through dust, or dust is reformed. We don't know exactly. We can constrain the star formation efficiency of local galaxies and the efficiency of the outflow, and to understand how dust, how efficient is dust destruction and grain growth in the interstellar medium. And that's it. And thanks for your attention.
Thank you, Ambra, for this very clear seminar. Comments, questions? I have a very naive one, just to one. I see one. Someone is asking to speak. Jorge, please.
Yes, thank you, Ambra, for the nice presentation. I have a naive question. So when you are comparing the initial mass functions in the last plot you showed, where you have the dust mass and also the specific star formation, the errors are quite large. So can you comment on how reliable it is to compare these with those large errors, or what is causing the errors?
As I was mentioning during the talk, some large errors are due to the fact that for this system, sometimes we only have upper limits. The other, so if you see large error bars, this can be due to the example of the photometry that you have to perform the CD fitting. And actually, the thing here, maybe here is more clear. So even if you consider the error bar, I mean, it's quite difficult with a Chabrier IMF to reproduce this observation here. So as I was mentioning, there are uncertainties when you do this process, also when you do assumption in relation to the dust properties. So of course, it's not the final word on the matter. What we found in this investigation was that a top heavy IMF was better fitting than Chabrier one. Of course, this is, I mean, even if you consider the error bar, this is pretty evident. Then if you change a thing and you further investigate, if things might change a little bit, of course, and this is of course what we would like to do in the future.
Okay, thanks, pretty cool.
Jose, please.
Yes, hello. I have also a naive question regarding the modeling of the dust production. You consider the supernova type 2, but I wonder if you if things will change if you consider also supernova type 1, knowing that they are kind of delayed with respect to the type 2 in terms of the supernova rate. And I remember at least in the past that they, supernova type 1, they have an influence on the chemical evolution for sure, and also the distribution of metallicities among the stellar populations. So do you think that they also produce some, let's say, sizable amount of dust that you have to consider them, or it's too difficult to do it, or I don't know, could you comment on that?
Yeah, sure. Thank you for this question. So the reason why I'm not mentioning type 1A supernova is because usually they are not considered to be big dust producers. So actually type 1A supernova are included in this calculation. So we already take this into account. There are several things that I can comment on. So of course, if we, since, as you said, this type of enrichment is delayed with respect to type 2 supernova, so in any case, this would not be useful to reproduce this high amount of dust, because here we really have just type 2 supernova. We don't have any AGB or any type 1A supernova. So in any case, for the problem we encounter, would not solve our issue. Then we have also to consider that in the case we have a top-heavy IMF, this contribution becomes even less because we are favoring the production of massive stars over low mass stars. So since type 1a supernova needs to have a white dwarf, so a progenitor that was low or intermediate mass stars, anyway, something that does not explode as type 1a supernova, we have that the contribution is even less. So generally speaking, it's believed that these type 1a supernova are not big dust producers, at least for these galaxies, but also in general, I think that is valid. On the other hand, they are very, very important for the iron production. So they are considered to be one of the most important sources of iron, for example, in our solar system. And this is pretty important, as you were mentioning, of course, when you study, for example, the stellar population of the bulge of our own galaxies, you can, with respect to, for example, the disk, you can see that there is the difference because you have an alpha enhancement of the element inside that indicates a fast production of stars due to the fact that alpha elements come from type 2 supernova, while iron seems comes from essentially from type 1a supernova. So you see an iron enrichment in outer parts. So they are very important in this respect, and to study the chemical enrichment, how quickly the stellar population have been formed in galaxies and in spheroids in particular. I'm not at all an expert about this, so I hope I have been precise enough to comment on this. But strictly speaking for the dust, nowadays we believe that they are not so critical dust producers. So from the observational point of view, the detection of dust in these systems is not... we maybe see a little bit of dust in some of them, but not so much, and it's not very well clear what is going on for these objects.
Okay. Hey, thank you.
You're welcome.
I have of course a naive question, Umbra. In this plot, I don't know nothing about the topic. I see huge error bars. Is the size of the error bars depending on the observational difficulty in the observations, or might it be a signature of an extra parameters not taken into account? And in particular, is it reasonable to think about the some dependence on the environment of each galaxy? Moving, right. can we colorize each point by the environment and finding some trend in your opinion or not? Well, the sample size is still limited, less than 50 points. I've seen this.
So if you, for example, see this large error bar here, this is due to the fact that, for example, for these specific galaxies, we only have upper limits for the detection of the dust continuum. We have to remember that this is a redshift between 5 and 10, so we have limited amount of information. And especially if you have upper limits, of course, you cannot say that much. And this is what we have now, and of course, what we want to use and try to understand, and in the future, I'm sure it will improve. So I would say it mostly depends on the photometry measurement. So the quality of the photometry. So for some galaxies you have better data, for others you have less information. And related to the environment, the hypothesis on these galaxies is that they have, so we don't know for high redshift, of course. The basic hypothesis is that they are pretty similar to local dwarf galaxies. And we assume that the local dwarf galaxies are homogeneous samples. So in terms of, they have certain properties in terms of, for example, star formation rate, star formation history, mass metallicity. So we are confident that we are looking at objects that are similar, maybe in different phases. So the point here was that we believe that these galaxies are in different phases of their evolution. Of course, you have scatter, so you can have course, you will have some differences between these in terms of, for example, of dust content. So there is, of course, a scatter because they are born with different characteristics. But then by looking at something that you believe is homogeneous, you can maybe think that what you see is a kind of evolution in time, you know, the, what I was telling before. So a quick enrichment at the beginning and then some outflows that is removing gas and dust from the interstellar medium.
Very clear. Thank you. Thank you very much. Denis, please.
Yes, it's just to add a question and then maybe a comment on your comment. If you look more carefully, you see that the one with large Euro bars are cluster either at around 10 to the minus 7 or around 10 to the minus 9 at the beginning and at the end of sequence. So that might mean that in the center you have dust, but you don't know about the other range. So I have a question to Umbra now. Is there a way, maybe using other parameter, to constrain especially what happens in the high SSFR galaxies on the right? I mean, by doing metallicities or other ALMA observation, I don't know, something like this.
Okay, so do you mean in terms of observation or modeling?
Yeah, in terms of observational constraints. I mean, here we have, we cannot detect because they are very high redshift, as you said, between 4 and 10. So if we get something from, I don't know, spectroscopy in, with JWST, metallicity can help maybe?
Yeah, so the point was exactly to get the metallicity information because, where it was, sorry, no, I was not here. Because as I was mentioning at the very beginning, so for local galaxies, we can put some good constraint, for example, on what we expected to have in terms of star formation efficiency and baryon content by looking at the metallicity. So, of course, if you can derive from with the JWST some diagnostic lines and line ratio that can constrain the metallicity, you will derive further constraint on the model, and you can compare to what you have in local galaxies in order to really understand how similar the systems are or which can be the differences between these very local galaxies and these very, very far objects. So it's pretty fascinating. And of course, it will be very helpful to gain this this kind of information and observation with the James Webb.
Any other question or comment? I don't see any raised hand. So maybe we can stop here. Thank you again, Umbra. Just some advertisement about the next week seminar. I don't have it on my screen. It will be presented by the Shouwen Hin, collaborator of Guylaine Lagache. He will talk about a powerful tool to search for the most distant and otherwise extreme dusty galaxies. So we will still heard about dust. Thank you, Umbra, very much.